discontented, like a nightingale without a song to sing. Why should I have spring fever when I know it isn't spring? I keep wishing I was somewhere else, walking down a strange new street, as a spider spinning daydreams. I'm as giddy as a baby on a swing. I haven't seen a crocus or a rosebud or a robin on the wing, but I feel so gay in a melancholy way that it might as well spring. Oh, that it might as well be spring. Spinning daydreams. I'm as giddy as a baby on a swing. I haven't seen a crocus or a rosebud or a robin on the wing, but I feel so gay in a melancholy way that it might as well be spring. That it might as well be spring. Dee dee doo doo. Dee dee doo doo.
Focus. 1 minute staring at the moon, next into your eyes, it's no surprise that my knees weaken at the lovely words you're speaking. More than diamonds to woo me. La 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 la. It takes more than money to groove me. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Feeling the way I do, it's hard to keep focus. 1 minute staring at the moon, next into your eyes, and it's no surprise that my knees did well. It takes more than money to groove me. La 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 la. It takes more than cars to get me where I need to go. Don't stop the flow. La la.
Plastic.
こちらは WMFO Medford 91.5 FM。
of course, is a hijacker, a parasite that infects the brain and induces suicide on behalf of a cause other than one's own genetic fitness.
Doors asleep, past shadows dark and deep. My mind dances and leaps in confusion. I don't know what is real, I can't touch what I feel, and I hide behind the shield of my illusion. So I'll continue to pretend my life will never end, and flowers bend with the rainfall. The mirror on my wall casts an image dark and small, but I'm not sure at all it's my reflection. I'm blinded by the light of God and truth and right, and I wander in the night without direction. So I'll continue to pretend my life will never end, and flowers never bend with the rainfall. No matter if you're born to play the king or pawn, for the The line is thinly drawn between joy and sorrow. So my fantasy becomes reality, and I must be what I must be and face tomorrow. So I'll continue to pretend my life will never end, and flowers never bend with the rainfall.
Who is it?
Asthma.
Asthma?
That's right, asthma.
You must have the wrong house. Who's there?
West Nile virus. Can I come in?
No, you can't come in.
You sure?
Yes, I'm sure. Yes.
Hello, it's Lyme disease.
I am not opening the door for Lyme disease.
I'll be back.
Who is it now?
$5 billion in property damage.
What do you want?
I'm just spreading the love, ma'am.
Go away.
When household pests are in your home, you never know what kind of health and property threats they're going to invite over. This public service announcement has been brought to you by the National Pest Management Association. Visit pestworld.org to become more aware of the serious threats common household pests like mice, roaches, and termites can pose to your health, your home, and your family.
This evening, on the Plastic Sushi Strawberries in Time sound collage, we are celebrating spring, with a theme called Spring is Sprung, while we are also, sadly, commemorating the sad passing of Tufts professor Daniel Dennett, a very scientifically oriented philosopher and author of more than 20 books and a teacher. In particular, the best teacher I've ever had in my life and my biggest intellectual idol. I have been privileged to take 8-semester-long courses and seminars with Dan Dennett. After a couple of years, he instructed me to call him Dan instead of Professor Dennett all the time. And the first couple of courses that I took here, like Language and Mind was the first one, and that had a couple hundred people, and it was all in a big auditorium. And that was terrific, of course. But as I took more courses, I volunteered to make recordings of the classes for any students who might have missed them, and we posted those on the class computer bulletin board. And we also, anybody who took the class was free to download those, and I've got an archive of those classes. And it's just wonderful knowing I can go back and listen to those. Because the seminars that came later, it wasn't, you know, in the auditorium with the 200-something people there. The best classes, the ones that I took later on, the seminars, we essentially met in a small room around the conference room table. The seminar on cultural evolution and on evolving minds. There was maybe about 17 people And we just had like a big conference room table. And I sat closest to him with the recorder. Well, there was two recorders that I set up, one at each end of the table. But and then after a couple of, after the first couple of classes when I was doing that, Professor Dennett invited me to basically take part in the classes as his guest. So I didn't have to pay money to Tufts anymore. And it was a real honor to do that. And in fact, he ended up to deal with like some administrative stuff that way. He entered me into the computing system as a teaching assistant. And boy, that, you know, now he told me I couldn't put it on my CV, my curriculum vitae, the academic equivalent of a resume, but I don't have one of those. But that was just a tremendous honor in my way. And he, so many other things. So I'm holding in my hand right now an object. It's made out of stone. It's called an Acheulean stone hand axe. And in our cultural evolution seminar, we read essays about these. These were basically about 1.2 million years ago, human beings first made these tools by taking rocks and then whacking them to fracture off pieces and make them into tools that could perform a variety of different tasks. They were essentially the Swiss Army knives of the Stone Ages, of the Stone Age. And yeah, so during that class, we investigated them, and I ended up going on the web and discovering that they were actually relatively affordable. So I bought one from an antiquities dealer, and I brought it into class, and it's become, for me, one of my most personal objects ever, because everybody in the class, particularly Professor Dennett, took it into their hand. And you can imagine, I mean, in my hand, it fits rather perfectly in any of four different orientations. And when I first got it, I was, there's so many things you could do with it. You can use it to when you've killed an animal, you can take one of the sharper edges and you can cut its skin open. You can use it as a scraper to go and clean the skin. You can use it to dig out roots. You can use it to smash nuts together. When I got it, Ritsuko was having a bunch of ginkgo nuts, and she was using a mallet to smash them. And I saw how I could use my Acheulean stone hand axe. And then the other thing about this object is that I passed it along. I brought it to a lot of my other friends and family. So Philip, my brother Philip, you have touched this and you held this in your hand at a Thanksgiving or a dinner. Yeah, we passed it around. So my mother, who's no longer with us, she definitely held this. And my friend Peter Stefano, who tragically died age 50, he got to hold it. And my friend Steve Mathis, who also died. So this, and it's what's also remarkable about this Acheulean stone hand axe is that it was made somewhere around a million-ish years ago. Could have been 1.2 million. Could have been 300,000 years ago, because that was kind of when they developed the new technology. A human made this, but a human who wasn't our Homo sapiens species. And that still seems very funny to me, that to know that a human made it, but not of our species. So yes, this object has great personal emotional value to me. And I remember, too, at the time that I got it, I had an iPhone and I had this Acheulean stone hand axe. And I said to myself, you know, these are kind of the two most amazing pieces of technology that I own. But the iPhone is so much more fragile. It could do amazing things, but, you know, once the iPhone battery, if you're out nowhere, you have nowhere to recharge it. You're just carrying around nothing. This Acheulean stone hand axe can still do stuff. It's a Swiss Army knife of the Stone Age. Well, with all that said, let's get on to our next new Sonic exploration this evening of sonically reversed ambient pieces. We've been listening to Irv Tybell's spectacular, well, his ultimate thunderstorm, but now we're going to get going here with Soil Festivities, Movement 1, sonically reversed. So this has a little bit of the artifacts too, but not so much. I mean, again, I haven't listened to this, so yeah, we're listening to this together.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thus concludes Vangelis's spectacular Soil Festivities Movement 1. Sonically reversed, played backwards. Now I'll bring up a little bit more of Irv Tybell's Ultimate Thunderstorm to carry us through the next set. So, another one of my intellectual idols is Daniel Levitin, who's an absolutely amazing human being. He's an author of a bunch of books, including This Is Your Brain on Music, and another one on the... Yes, This Is Your Brain on Music. And The World in Six Songs. And he's also a professor of neuroscience at McGill University, where he runs a laboratory. And he's also a Grammy Award-winning music producer. And he's also been a big fan of Dan Dennett. I talked to him after a music performance he gave a number of years ago over at the Museum of Science. And at that point, during his visit here to Boston, he had had lunch, as he mentioned, with me, with Dan Dennett. As we discussed things. And when I mentioned that I had taken, at that point, several courses with Professor Dennett, boy, his eyes lit up. Because he enjoyed the lunch that he had, but you could just see he's like, oh yeah, if you lived close by and you could take classes, and it made me realize how lucky I am in so many ways. Another thing about that was in 2020, I was taking another class with him, my final class with him, the final class that he taught here at Tufts. And when COVID happened, we moved to the Zoom classes. And one of the things that he mentioned was that all of us at the time in this crazy COVID world that we were having, but we were among the most privileged human beings to have ever existed. Each of us, whether we were a student or a professor or a guest, logged into a computer, participating remotely, the technology that we had available to us. And that's something that I very much think about all the time, just the kind of the privileges. And, you know, any of us, if you're listening right now, whether on the radio or the podcast, and all of the things that we have available to us in 2024, I mean, certainly there are people who are having miserable lives right now, but I think so many of us are just having the most amazing lives possible as human beings ever. So I think we're going to, well, okay, let me talk a little bit more. So every year for a long time now, like decades, I've been making holiday cards and sending them to an elite group of people like you, Chuck and Diane, and you, brother Philip, of course. And Dan Dennett got on my list as I think with the first class that I took with him in 2009. And eventually, they're all handcrafted. I, at this point, my cards have a standard formula, like a sound collage, like a Tears of the Gods or a Plastic Sushi. And the formula for the cards is two quotes that I have this quotes.txt file, and whenever I run across an interesting quote, I put it in there. And I go through it, and I pick what two quotes that resonate with me for any particular year. And I make them look like fortune cookies, and then I have some image that speaks to me. And then we have glitter, a whole lot of glitter. And one year, I came across a quote that it was actually from a fortune cookie. This was kind of pretty early on. And it was, "We cannot direct the wind, but we can adjust the sails." And I thought it described Dan Dennett's notion of free will very well. So I put it on the card and I sent it to everybody. And I was very happy later on when he was given a talk that I attended, and I sit in the front row. I always try to sit in the front row. And he was going through the presentation and he was talking about free will, and he used that quote, which actually was from 1859 by one Cora L.V. Hatch. And he looked at me right in the front row. He was kind of, this was a presentation he was going to be given multiple times. And he looked at me and our eyes locked and he smiled. And I was so happy that, you know, I do something. I send the Christmas card to one of the world's greatest intellectuals, man that I admire. And he ends up using some part of that in the presentations that he gives to lots of people. So that was another thing that made me very happy. Thank you, Dan Dennett, for everything. Well, let's see. In the amount of time that we've got left, I think I will play you another song here. This one by the Armenian Duduk player, Jivan Gasparian. And, okay, I'm having a little trouble going through here. But I think this is it right now. And some thoughts by another one of my big intellectual idols, Richard Feynman, who worked on the Manhattan Project, the first atomic bomb. And these are some of his thoughts.
If you got to moral questions, I do have something I would like to say about it, because the original reason to start the project, which I had, which was that the Germans were in danger, started me off on a process of action, which was to try to develop this. First, the system in Princeton, then at Los Alamos, to try to make the bomb work. All kinds of attempts to redesign, to make it a worse bomb, or whatever, and so on, and all working all this time to see if we could make it go. And so it was a project in which we all worked very, very hard and all cooperating together. And with any project like that, you continue to work trying to get success, having decided to do it. But what I did immorally, I would say, was not to remember the reason that I said I was doing it, so that when the reason changed, which was that Germany was defeated, not the single thought came to my mind at all about that, that that meant now that I have to reconsider why I'm continuing to do this. I simply didn't think, okay? I remember, perhaps I was blinded by my own reaction. It was a very considerable elation and excitement. And there was kind of parties and people got drunk and it would make a tremendously interesting contrast of what was going on in Los Alamos at the same time as what was going on in Hiroshima. I was involved with this happy thing and also drinking and drunk and playing drums, sitting on the hood of the bonnet of a Jeep and playing drums and excitement running all over Los Alamos at the same time as the people were dying and struggling in Hiroshima.
Say, not naming any names or any of that stuff, and with no thought of any ego involvement in this, just something came naturally. But I wonder how many people can come close to even one of these situations. For instance, let us say that I've had quite an association a while back with a 17-year-old a West African Mandingo tribeswoman from Liberia, and wasn't my idea. I mean, I like, certainly wasn't resisting it, but we'd be driving along somewhere, and she'd say, "Why do men like to fondle women's breasts?" She'd keep asking questions like that, and then hiking her dress up to the ceiling. So after a while, I said, "What do you want?" And, "Sister, I've got it. That's what you like, and I'm not resisting you." Anyway, that's the way that went. She was quite a scholar, too. Funny part of it, she got the best marks in a class in high school when I had met her a few months ago, but before then, when I was giving a talk at the high school.
You've been listening to the Plastic Sushi Strawberries in Time Sound Collage here on WMFO. Thanks so much for listening. And let's just get going here. We've got some dusk in Okefenokee here as I try to do a better job of being a DJ and get Andres on the mic here for you. So we have got Aux 1 ready now for Andres to get going. And thank you so much, dear listeners. I plan to be back again next week with another sound collage for you. And until then, you know, if you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel of a car and driving.